Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. For whatever reason, we've decided an hour before I go to takeover is a good idea to do this show. We're here, but we're
We fear getting behind again, and so we just decided, you know what, we have an hour / 45 minutes, realistically, between me getting home from work late because my coworker didn't show up, and you leaving and rushing off to takeover. But you know what, damn it, we're getting Retro Raw done, we are not getting behind again, this is happening, and we need to talk about that Bill Clinton impersonator on this episode, because it was something. Hi, I'm Sandra.
Sandra's here, I'm Kenny, and the thing is, we know that Sandra hates doing these shows as it is, even though she will not give them up to anybody else. So really, it's just like a despair circle that we're in. Sandra, we can give it to somebody. No, you're not giving it to somebody else. I'm covering it. Okay.
but who else are you going to get who hasn't seen it before and is as delightfully strange as me?
That's true. You are strange. Delightful is the optional asterisk that we can put in depending on what week it is.
You love me and you know it.
But you actually enjoyed this episode more.
Like
it was
I did.
More of a fun. I think even outside of me knowing it, I think this was more of a fun episode.
Mm-hmm.
So just to kind of fill you guys in on the night before on Heat, which is now up on Patreon. Finn and I recorded that today. I feel like I've not stopped recording today. Mankind and Kane teamed up, and then Animal thought, okay, so Hawk's too drunk to compete. Who will I get as a partner instead? Draws, which did not work out well for him.
So Draws is continuing to be pals with LOD then. That makes sense. Draws is like that kid, you know, Draws is like I was in high school, because like I would sit with one group of kids one day and then like sit with another group of kids another day at lunch. Like sometimes I was on the floor
like
by the lockers.
Make a choice.
And sometimes I was in, you know, the foods room, because we didn't have a cafeteria. So, you know, you just kind of like sat all over the school. And it was fun. Like you just kind of drift. I was definitely a drifter. I was like the high school Elias.
Okay.
Without the guitar.
Okay.
I'm very loopy. I've been up for a long time and I just got out of work and it was stressful.
So Mankind and Kane defeated Draws and Animal to kick off the show. We also had Edge beating Brian Christopher in a pretty fun match. We had Sable and Jacqueline in the best sass off I've ever seen, where Sable just calls her a whore, like just because that's what you call people. And Shane McMahon's description of Sable, you'll know why I went shh there. Sable comes out and Shane McMahon in 1998 goes, swing, because Wayne's World came out 6 years ago.
I was going to say, that is not a current reference to 1998. I love Wayne's World as much as the next guy, but like...
He's Vince McMahon's child. What else do you expect?
That is accurate, and it is very apparent, obviously.
We got the debut of Gangrel on WWF television as he beat Scott Taylor. We got Triple H and X-Pac beating Southern Justice, and in the main event, The Undertaker was going to come out to answer, you know, now that he's not a tag champion, what's he going to do? He says he's going to intercept Steve Austin on the intersection to the highway to hell. And of course, I immediately thought, roadblock, end of the line.
I was just thinking the fast lane.
The fast lane or the, yeah, all those. And then Austin comes out, and it was kind of a cool deal where Austin comes down, and he's like on the ramp, like near the ring, and then like fire explodes and Kane's at the top of the ramp. So Austin's in between Undertaker and Kane, and then we just go off the air. So a pretty good setup for Raw, you know, if you want to see what's going to happen. And I think Finn and I have agreed, we're 3 weeks in now, we're like, because the show is like 45 minutes that they've got, they just do everything they possibly can in 45 minutes.
That actually sounds kind of fun. There's not so much padding.
Oh, there's no padding. Like, you literally can't get comfortable. It's like a really stressful hour because you're like, oh, God, it's something else.
Is it like, because I'm trying to remember back when we started Retro Raw and it was 1 hour in the glory, glory days. I don't feel like, I mean, things were fast paced, and they moved right along, but it still seemed like there was some padding even in the hour. Heat is really like just a condensed Raw.
It's actually like, it's even different to NXT in the sense of like NXT is paced. Like NXT's kind of like, you get
NXT,
a squash
you'll
match.
Get a wee video package. You get or a video, 7.
I mean, they might give you a video package on Heat, but by the time the video package finishes, there's people in the fucking ring, there's a match going on, somebody's got a snake, Mario Lopez trying to beat up Val Venus, Gangrel's debut.
I do need to look up that clip of Mario Lopez.
So I'm sure by the end of 1998 or 2018, Sandra will go, okay, I'll watch one just to see what it is.
I am kind of curious about Shane McMahon's commentary just to see how horrendous it is. So I might tune in to the odd Edge match.
It's so bad.
Like, I might watch Edge versus Brian Christopher because I feel like that was probably pretty good.
It was good. Also, China beating up Yamaguchi-san is fun too. Anyway, let's talk about Raw. We're going to try and do this in as quick as time as possible because I need to go. We kick off the show with Steve Austin driving a hearse into the arena. He drives the hearse in. He's got beer. He warns Vince that he's got 23 more and he'll drink them all if he doesn't come out. Now, what you will notice on this version of the show is you have Stone Cold Steve Austin's theme playing. That is not what was playing in 1998, ladies and gentlemen. It was AC/DC's Highway to Hell. You know that cool as fuck song?
It's a great song.
That everybody loves. It's like, even if you don't like rock and roll, you love Highway to Hell, the song. So that was playing, and it was cool as fuck, and we don't get that. Because, you know.
I mean, at least they played Austin's theme, which is also, like, fairly cool, and not, like, remember when Austin was standing on top of a truck one time, and I think he was blaring AC/DC, I don't know what song it was supposed to be, but I'm pretty sure someone told me it was AC/DC, and they just played, like, and it was, like, the worst.
It was the worst, 100%. But, so anyway, Austin comes out, he basically says that, you know, he's going to drink all the beers if Vince doesn't come down. So Vince comes out with all his cronies. Austin wonders if Vince is now happy that Austin and Undertaker now aren't tag team champions. Because, you know, he's pissed that Vince, from day one when they became champions, his whole role was to make sure they were not champions.
Right.
Hence, every week, you know, it's a four corners match or it's a whatever. And, you know, now him and Undertaker aren't tag team champions. Vince is acting like, you know, I'm not sad that you guys aren't champions. So Austin just starts screaming at him. He's going to take his foot out of the grave that Vince said he was in and shove it up Undertaker's ass. He's going to beat him up, and if Vince gets his way, he's going to get it too. Undertaker will be put in the hearse and driven, and he's basically going to put him in the hearse and kill him, is the message that Steve Austin gives. And I thought you would appreciate that message.
I did appreciate that message. The entire time Steve Austin was out here with the hearse, like, first of all, I have difficulty distinguishing hearses from limos when I just see them. So I was like, oh, why is he in a limo? Because I wasn't paying that much attention. And then I was like, oh, it's a hearse. That makes a lot more sense. Because Steve Austin in a limo does not make sense. But I just, maybe I'm just too conditioned by nowadays, but I was like, are they setting up a hearse match? Like, is that what they're doing? Because I did not want that. I did not want that at all. And I was just terrified that Vince McMahon was going to come out and say, this is now a hearse match. And
I would totally watch
stupid.
A hearse match.
I'm sure
all
that
in for
you
hearse
would.
Match.
But I mean, how many good... Because it's the same premise as an ambulance match, right? Which is basically a casket match with the ambulance being a cat. Like, I don't like matches where you have to put someone in something with... There are exceptions, right? Like Grave Consequences in Lucha Underground. The Hollow Wicked versus Ophidian match was, like, fucking amazing in Chikara. But... it's rare that a casket match or a put someone in something else match really grips me. So I did not want a hearse match, and it doesn't seem like that's what we're getting. So I'm happy about that. But yeah, I mean, this is kind of the same standard fare, right? Like Austin's pissed off. Obviously, he takes offense to what the Undertaker said about him on Heat. I was glad that you clued me in about what had happened on Heat before I watched this, because again, I was a little confused.
I've realized I now need to do that every single week.
You pretty much do, because otherwise I am going to be confused. Because they're not super helpful in explaining it.
No, but then what you do is you complain, even though they update you in the video package.
No, but like, I noticed the video package this time at least.
You were like, oh, I just thought that was the time that Undertaker dressed up as Kane last time. It's like, just watch it! There's a big, like a tenth of the screen is taken up by a Burning Heat logo.
No, but I didn't notice. That's what happens when I take notes, though. I think I took notes for that show, and so I was looking at my computer because I was typing.
Yeah, no, I think for like your enjoyment of what's going on, I think you need to have a little recap, because then you can understand why somebody's doing something. I mean, I guess like from their perspective, it's effective in the terms of if you're in 1998 and you're watching, then Heat's like a show that you would watch. Because...
No, and it does make it seem like Heat is necessary viewing, that they don't give you tons and tons of recaps. Because I think Raw and SmackDown in present day, not now, but pre-brand split Raw and SmackDown, or SmackDown specifically, fell into the trap of it was so incredibly missable because anything that happened on SmackDown you would see in like 12 video packages on Raw to pad out the 3 hours, right? So you didn't really have to watch SmackDown. And, you know, either that or anything you saw on SmackDown was just a rehash of what happened on Raw. So you didn't have to watch both shows. The credit that I will give to them in 1998 is it does feel like things are happening on Heat that you have to see for storyline progression.
That's one thing I actually like. I shit on this guy more than most people. But the one thing I'll give Vince Russo is, like, it was car crash and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I think that in 98 especially, like, the undercard, I have a lot of issues with. brawl throw and all that kind of stuff.
But, it is terrible.
But he does have this thing where, like, you know, if you miss an episode of a show, it is quite difficult to know exactly what's happening. Like, something will have happened the week before, because I feel like now, if I watch the night after the July pay-per-view and then I tune back in, maybe the go-home show to SummerSlam and I've missed two, I'm probably going to be okay.
Yeah.
Like, because I'll be... So I think that's something that today would actually benefit from, is, like, you know, make somebody have to kind of watch the show. Mm-hmm. Like, even like the thing they did with AJ Styles and Samoa Joe on the network, on WWE.com, where it was like them, you know, getting torn apart backstage or whatever. Like, you were like, oh, I better go and check out that clip that I didn't get to see on SmackDown.
See, I didn't check out that clip. I definitely didn't even see that. But it sounds great, because I like AJ Styles and Samoa Joe and them fighting.
So that was the opening segment. Pretty good start to the show. Up next is the advertised Ken Shamrock, Owen Hart, and Dan Severn triple threat match. The Nation are sent to the back, so that it has to be one-on-one-on-one. And Dan Severn here is my favorite person, because he's just decided he'll come out. Now, we all know how much Dan Severn does not enjoy wearing wrestling gear, because he does it so infrequently.
Right.
But he decides to get in full gear, put on his t-shirt that sweats, and we don't know why, and just stands in the ring. And
he just stands in the corner and watches. Like, he doesn't even try to break up pins, which surprised me. At the end, it made sense, but...
Dan Severn's like the wrestling version of dogging.
What?
But, you know, dogging, the whole thing where you're supposed to, like, have sex in a car and, like, you put lights on or something and people, like, watch you or something?
No, I'm unfamiliar with that, but...
Yeah, it's the whole, like, a good time. Yeah, so Dan Severn is watching it. You know, he's getting off on it, so... When he's not, he looks uninterested again, because that's his look.
I was going to say, it doesn't even look like he's getting off on it. It looks like he's bored. It looks like he's annoyed that he's had to come out here. Like, he went to the Steve Blackman School of Emotion. But he's just, I think I messaged you watching this, because we were watching Raw around similar time. You were ahead of me. And I was just like, Dan Severn does not look like he wants to be here. And I was confused. It didn't make any sense during the match to me, because I was like, why isn't he breaking up these pinfall attempts? Shouldn't he want to win the match? Like... The whole point is to win the match. He's not the referee here. I thought he might have gotten confused and thought he was the special guest referee again, but he wasn't really trying to do anything or count anything. So I didn't know what was going on. It wasn't until the end, the Swerve brother, that I kind of realized, oh, that's why Dan Severn wasn't, you know, breaking up a pinfall or a submission attempt by Owen Hart on Ken Shamrock, because it turns out they were in cahoots, Kenny.
I love about cahoots me. So anyway,
I know
so
you do.
Dan Severn ends up just coming at Ken Shamrock from behind, as you do in a dogging situation, and puts him in a chokehold. Owen stomps on him, and now Owen and Dan are in cahoots.
They are, and I'm here for it, honestly. Like, I don't know, is Dan Severn joining the Nation of Domination? Like, what is happening here? I don't know why Owen Hart and Dan Severn are in cahoots. Have they been in cahoots the whole time? Was Dan Severn aware that he was going to be in cahoots with Owen Hart when he special guest refereed the Dungeon match, and that's why he didn't notice that Owen Hart was so blatantly tapping Ken Shamrock's hand? I don't know. So many questions. I enjoyed this match. It was really good. It was, I mean, Owen Hart and Ken Shamrock are great together, and Dan Severn was, like, mildly involved. But I think I would have enjoyed it more just as a proper triple threat, like, in terms of match quality. But I guess the story at the end with them being in cahoots and having an alliance or whatever, it is interesting. It's very interesting. And, of course, Steve Blackman comes out to try to make peace, because Dan Severn is... Was he choking out Ken Shamrock? Is that what was happening?
Yeah, so he was choking out Ken Shamrock. Then we have Steve Blackman comes down. He kind of drops Owen Hart. Then he glares at Severn, who then breaks the hold, because, like, Steve and Dan Severn are pals because they both can't emote.
I feel like they have this bond of, like... I would say that they have an emotional bond, but it's almost like they have a bond over an emotional void. But Dan Severn is, like... intense about it. Like, he's just, he comes
See,
out
I,
and he looks
I
like he's gonna
more...
murder you, whereas Steve Blackman comes out and always just looks like vaguely sad and bored and confused.
Because I thought that Steve Blackman and Dan Severn, like, they had sex one night when they were really drunk and they both
oh and now it's
they
like
hadn't.
The awkward thing where they can't look each other in the eye.
Sandra and I have spoken about that from a very personal place. Totally never
not
had that
either of us have ever done anything like that before.
No, never about four times. So Steve Blackman then checks on Shamrock, and Blackman gets put in the chokehold. Shamrock recovers. Owen and Dan Severn run away, and Slaughter's try to calm down an angry Ken Shamrock, which does not go well, because you know that angry Ken Shamrock
is a lot more likely to explode than calm down, like actually explode. I am just waiting for him to explode in a mess of viscera. Like, it's not
Ken Shamrock is like in Glasgow, if you go to a chip shop after a night out and they don't have chips and cheese, like if they ran
it.
Can you imagine?
Like, so, I'm imagining this scenario and it sounds like the worst thing.
It would be the worst. So, yeah, so, but like you say, the good thing is there's questions. Owen and Dan together, is Dan now part of the nation? What's going to happen? You know, questions. Good.
I mean, Owen and Dan Severn as a tag team, awesome. Like, because Owen and Rocky as a tag team is fine, I guess, but I just don't really understand why they're together.
They seem like they're together, like, to prove a point, but not because they actually care about each other.
Yeah, like, they're just sort of both part of a group, and so they're just sort of lumped together. But I feel like Owen Hart and Dan Severn could have maybe a more real connection.
Bart Gunn versus the Godfather in the Brawl for All. It's atrocious, but Bart knocks out the Godfather in the end, and he wins. So, Bart Gunn is impressive in that he's really good at fighting and punching, but he still bores me to tears.
I sort of love the idea that he is so boring, though. Like, and they're making him have more of a character. I kind of like that they're sort of harnessing his boredom. Because whereas Steve Blackman always looks sort of, like, vaguely sad and confused and not like he wants to make peace, but looks like he just wandered into a ring somewhere and now is breaking up a fight for what reason he doesn't know. At least Bart Gunn has some motivation, right? Like, he's in the Brawl for All. He knocked out Dr. Death Steve Williams. He knocks out the Godfather, which, again, Brawl for All, terrible concept, because now you have a wrestler with a head injury. Great plan, WWF. But Bart Gunn, after he knocks out the Godfather here, goes to commentary again, and he goes to JR, and he's like, hey, look, respect me. You know, like, I just knocked him out too. Are you guys going to give me respect yet? And JR kind of nods and goes, yeah, respect. You earned it. It's not given. You earned it. And I think that's kind of an interesting story detail. I kind of like Bart Gunn now.
So I'm next.
I'm still trying to figure out who he looks like, though. It really bothers me. Like, I can't tell if he just looks like generic stock image white man, or if he
looks like
generic
stock image white man. That,
is that what it is? Because, like, he has some vague, like, Dolph Ziggler tendencies, but I don't know. Like, I think maybe it is just stock image white man.
We get Gangrel fighting Brian Christopher, basically the exact same thing we got on Heat the night before. Like, exactly.
Didn't he fight Scott Taylor on Heat?
No, he fought... he fought Brian Christopher, and then Scott Taylor fought...
No, Edge fought Brian Christopher, I thought.
Yes, okay, so he's basically fighting the other member of Too Much. He beats Brian Christopher, he's got vampire teeth, he's got one of my favourite teeth. Like, not being funny, I think Gangrel's theme tune is better than Edge's. Just saying. It's so good.
It is really good, to be fair. I love Gangrel's theme tune. I love Gangrel's teeth. I love Gangrel's cup of red viscous liquid. I love the fact that he drinks the liquid. I love the fact that he spits the liquid.
Gangrel deliberately spat the liquid on Donald Trump's wife in the late 90s. Because
I saw
Gangrel
that. And Donald Trump, both of them.
Because he was ahead of the time. Gangrel knew it was happening. Gangrel knew it was up. And people were saying,
I just love the idea that Gangrel was also being ribbed at that point, because he was like, I didn't know that they were there. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to go for it. And this is great. And I'm getting to perform in Madison Square Garden. And oh, wait, this is just Vince playing a joke on Donald Trump and Melania. His then girlfriend, I think.
No. This was his previous wife, I think.
No, it was Melania.
Was it?
Yeah, I saw a picture.
Oh.
It said it was with his girlfriend, Melania. I don't know how to pronounce her former name. It's
racist.
K-N-A-U-S-S.
How would you say that? I'm not gonna do that. I'm above it.
Racist.
I totally know what it is. You can call me a racist. You're the
racist.
You're racist,
too, if you can't pronounce it. Goes both ways, brother. But
that was a low blow. Although I'm just sitting right, so Hulk, can I make a plea to my friend Hulk?
Sure, go for it.
So Hulk Hogan, right? When I was 9 years old, my mother, who is a large lady, I leg dropped her when she was trying to read a magazine in her room. And
I can picture this happening, and I can just picture the look on her face.
And I may have commentated it and called her Yokozuna. But I was okay with that because I was channeling my hero Hulk Hogan at the time. Now, all these people have said over the years, you know, they slate you and they try to diminish your contributions to wrestling. But without you, we wouldn't be here. And I understand that and I accept that. And even when you called people the bad word and I thought you were a fucking idiot, I still defended you. I said, you're not a racist. Now, I still don't necessarily think you're a racist, but you've had this fucking gift handed to you that you've managed to somehow get another chance. And then you go and Bill Apter's podcast and all you had to do, Hulk, was just say, do you know what? If the New Day and Titus O'Neil don't accept my apology yet, then I just need to work to get it. But instead, you stupid, tie-dye, bald fuck, you decide, oh, I'll just tell them that they don't understand the brotherhood. Is that the brotherhood when you stopped a union in the 80s because you wanted more money for yourself, you yellow, tanned prick? So my message to you, Hulk, would be, why don't you try living in the real world where you have not lived for many, many years and try to allow the small level of people left who try to give you cut you a bit of slack and be a fucking adult?
I think this is Kenny McIntosh just accepting that Hulk Hogan is a cretin of humanity. And I feel like we've had a breakthrough here tonight.
Still love the wrestling character. Won't change it.
I know you do. I know he's always going to be your fave, but some people it's like real hard to stand by anything that he has said or done recently. Like, his apology has all been, oh, I'm sorry I got caught. Watch what you say in public.
But even then, I was like, you know what? He has to work. You know, he has to just, you know, there's more to do. But that appearance was so tone deaf. So tone deaf of today.
Like the past 20 years of Hulk Hogan's career?
I don't know, he was still selling out buildings and doing big pay-per-view buys when he was in his 50s, so, you know, wouldn't say that. But what I would say is, he just needs to learn. Like, who the fuck is, who is his PR people?
Like, does he have PR? Is it Jimmy Hart?
Yeah, I think it's Jimmy Hart. See, when Tom Cruise...
Jimmy Hart needs to, you know, step in here.
When Tom Cruise stopped jumping on Oprah's couch, did Hogan take his publicity people? Anyway, back to Raw.
Who knows? It's not a great situation. And
so Gangrel beats Brian Cross. How did we... Anyway, I'm not even going to try.
I have no idea.
Gangrel wins. There's a brawl.
Gangrel wins. Gangrel is great. I do wonder how high Gangrel's dry cleaning bills must have been, right? Because he's spitting that red liquid. He comes out wearing a white shirt, right? Like, that's his uniform. And he comes out wearing a white, like, ruffled shirt. And he spits the red liquid all over it. Like, does he immediately go back and have a sink full of cold water and club soda that he gets it out? Like, is that able to be bleached? It did not look like a bleachable fabric. I have so many questions. Like, these are the questions that I would ask Gangrel. And, like, some people would care. Probably not a lot. But I would care because I'm very curious about his laundry routine.
So, okay, up next, we actually have a brawl in the back with Steve Blackman.
But, also, Edge was staring very intently at Gangrel when he was in the ring, and I thought that was important.
Almost like
something might be afoot.
So there's a brawl in the back with Steve Blackman, Ken Shamrock, all those guys. Bill Clinton's on the phone. Bill Clinton's on the phone, because Jerry Lawler knows Bill Clinton. And...
Have you ever heard of a more absurd thing? Like Jerry Lawler and Bill Clinton. Like, they would not get along.
No, I genuinely feel that's who Bill Clinton would know. Jerry, that joke you made about that whore was really funny. Like,
yeah,
that's what would
yeah,
that...
fair.
So, but anyway, so tell the people of Inside the Ropes, what was Bill Clinton's message to America? That he wanted to, you know, make them feel like, you know, even though he got sucked off by an intern, that everything was going to be okay for the United States.
Now, I'm trying to remember because there were, like, what, 3 or 4 interview segments?
But this was the one where he gave the line.
Is this the one where he said, and I'm trying to remember the line. Was it, like, the more I'm getting it on, the more I'm getting done? Like, it was pretty much the happier he is, the more he does for America.
The more I'm getting off, the more I'm getting done.
Yes, that's what it was.
The more I'm getting off, the more I'm getting done. So America...
Because I think Bill Clinton was first on the phone during the entrance for the Brawl for All, right? Like when the Godfather was entering and they were talking about the hose.
Pretty much.
I mean, 1998, ladies and gentlemen. What even? But yes, Bill Clinton has decided to reassure America that in these trying times, the more sex he can have, or the more, you know, ejaculations he can have, the more America's policy will be taken care of, is essentially his message. And what even? Why is this on Raw? I don't understand. It did make me laugh out of absurdity, but like...
The graphic
of Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky that they play with utmost seriousness, right?
Do you find something funny about this?
What even is happening? The thing is, it didn't tie into anything. It was just random. Bill Clinton is on the phone and he's like, oh, of course, I'm watching Raw. I don't have anything else to do.
So then we get
to... Trump.
We get told that DX and The Nation are going to have a street fight, but apparently they've just started backstage, which I like, because if you're going to street fight, like, it makes sense that you would just batter each other backstage before you start.
Well, yeah, and so, it's The Nation and DX, right? Like, they cannot stop brawling. If they are in any sort of proximity to one another, they are going to start fighting. That's just what we've learned over the past, it seems like, forever on Retro Raw, is The Nation and DX will fight, and they will fight until the end of time. And it, you know, it's fine.
We get DOA with Mr. Dotcom on the motorcycle against Farouk and Scorpio.
I'm just sad we didn't get any of Paul Ellering's, you know, waxing lyrical about the internet this week.
Well, it's coming. I think this was the match where Clinton was on the phone. It was one of the two. It's been a while since I watched it. But we got Farouk and Scorpio versus DOA. It was as terrible as you would imagine it would be. Actually, do you know what the kayfabe jobber said to me yesterday? At one point in his life, his favorite wrestler was Farouk.
What?
Yep.
Was this Blue Helmet Farouk or...
No, it was Acolyte Farouk, who you've yet to see.
Oh, I've yet to see that, but he's associated with Bradshaw, so...
I really doubt that it's going to move you in any real way. I mean, vaginally, it might move you slightly.
You know, I highly doubt it, because he'll be associated with Bradshaw and they're just going to like play cards in a bar and smoke cigars, right?
Would you hate fuck Bradshaw, though?
I'd rather hate fuck Farouk.
But you don't hate Farouk, so why would you
hate
fuck
him? No, I don't. Well, you would pity fuck Farouk,
I think.
Yeah, probably.
Would you want him to shout damn when he's done?
Of course.
Okay, good.
I mean, like, if you're gonna fuck Farouk, like, he should definitely shout damn
when he's
done,
only doing this if you shout damn when you come, right?
I mean, isn't that all he does nowadays anyway? Like, not come, but shout damn?
Yeah, Farouk, he's retired. All he does is jizz all the time.
Just everywhere.
My name's Ron Simmons and all I can do is come. Scorpio don't manage to come in this match. They just get beat by the original twin Nazi magic, as you call it.
Yep, Nazi twin magic.
Nazi twin magic.
Mm-hmm. That happens.
Anyway, DX and The Nation decide to come out and fight on the top of the ramp for a brief period of time to remind you that they exist.
Why did they come out and fight here?
Because it's an uncontained brawl. You can't contain it.
It's just too much chaos and anything can happen in the World Wrestling Federation.
You're learning.
All right. I just thought that maybe they wanted to fight in the proximity of Farouk to be like, hey, look what you had. It's done now.
Okay, so I need to try and leave in 20 minutes. I'm going to try and speed this up a little bit.
Okay,
so
fine.
Then we get to DX versus The Nation in a street fight. It's actually pretty fun, to be fair. It's like they're all just kind of hammering the shit out of each other. There's weapons. You know, D'Lo's great in this. Anyway, it all leads to, in the end, The Rock gets a pile driver by Billy Gunn, which is a tremendous pile driver. It makes me realize how much I miss the pile driver. But then Jeff Jarrett's out. And he goes after X-Pac, and then Southern Justice are out, and then Jeff Jarrett starts cutting X-Pac's hair while Triple H gets rock bombed.
Because he's a barber now.
He's now a barber.
That's
Jeff
his
the Barber
thing.
Jarrett. It's usually weird. I got this morning. I got this message from Jeff Jarrett. Hey, prick, enjoy your weekend.
That's amazing. That's you know, Jeff. I really like Jeff Jarrett. I don't think I ever posted that video on Twitter. I need to do that.
You do. So anyway, I was like, cheers, Jeff. Jeff.
Aw, you're pals now.
Jeff Jarrett and X-Pac are going back and forth. Triple H is in the ring on his own with The Nation. Rock's just kicking the shit out of him. They have a ladder set up in the corner. Rock picks up the ladder, drives it into Triple H's ribs. So basically X-Pac's on the apron. Mark Henry makes sure he doesn't get in there. Rock heads to the back and the match is over. So it's a street fight where apparently nobody wins.
Yeah, it just sort of... like devolved into chaos, just like every single thing that the Nation and DX do. Like, the street fight was fun enough, I guess, but I just kind of was watching it and it just kind of felt like white noise to me, because it's just, you know, like, it is happening. There is violence in front of me. It's a brawl, but that's fine. I was glad that you clued me in to what happened on Heat the night before so that I understood the Jeff Jarrett X-Pac sort of interaction. I think Jeff Jarrett X-Pac actually at SummerSlam is going to be a really good match. So I'm looking forward to that. I hope it gets more than like 3 minutes, because I think the two of them could actually do well.
Ben and I were talking about how, like, I personally forgot how great Sean Waltman is. Like, he really...
No, he's excellent. Like, he's not great at speaking. Like, maybe if we can just keep him away from a microphone so he doesn't go like,
I'm going to rip some ass!
I'm gonna rip some ass and like look at my crotch and balls and but you know, make you, some noise.
You absolutely need to cosplay as X-Pac Halloween.
I totally should, and maybe I will. We'll see. But I think in ring though, and in like in terms of wrestling storytelling, he's great. I really like X-Pac right now, and I like him better than I like most members of the Nation of Dom, the Nation of Domination, other than China, obviously, because she's Jennifer always going to be my fave. But yeah, I mean, Nation and DX is just kind of like a thing that keeps occurring to me, so I can't say that I get very excited about
What's occurring?
What's occurring? Aw, Ness. But yeah. Sorry, Gavin.
Why does Sandra know weird British sitcoms?
Because way, I do.
I forgot to tell you. I think I can't remember if I told you on Twitter, but so I'm interviewing Baron Corbin, and I was like, oh, by the way, look, this isn't going to be funny to you, but we actually do like a bit on one of our podcasts where I play this like really bad naff 90s TV show theme tune whenever you come out and you're the constable, expecting him to kind of just like nod along, go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he looked at me and went, oh, I know. I was like, what?
Like, he totally knows about the theme tune?
And he was like, yeah, somebody sent it to me, said it should be my new theme tune. He was like, it's awful, right? And I was like, yep. And he was like,
that's amazing.
Like, that's cool. So, Corbin knows.
Big Ben's Corbin strikes again.
Anyway, so yeah, so DX and the Nation can't quit each other, but that takes us to Tiger Ali Singh, because we, of course, have to be dragged down by him. He wants to give...
Is this experiment almost over? Because, well, I mean, it's not getting over, brother, but... He's almost done because I'm tired of it.
Oh, no, it goes on for a while. Great. He will give $500 to anyone who will lick his assistant. I mean, I'm saying assistant as a, you know, anyway.
Abu? Apu? What's his name?
Apu, yeah.
Yeah, because it's not Abu, because that's the monkey in Aladdin. So,
and then it's not Babu, who ends up coming in later and is really disgusting.
Right. But so, they showed, like, this vignette of Apu, like, working out beforehand, so he was all sweaty, because that was a thing. Because, like, apparently Tiger Ali Singh makes his manservant work out and look good for him? Question mark?
Pretty much. But anyway, so basically what happens is Tiger Ali Singh will give $500 to anyone to lick his manservant's unwashed shoes. He has to lick in between the toes. Now, as someone who really does not enjoy feet, like, I really do not enjoy feet. And if you think that's funny,
no, he doesn't. Like, and if you think won't even look at toenails if they look weird.
And if you tweet me something, I will block you. I'm just going to warn you now.
It's so not a gimmick, folks.
I'm just not. Because you know what gets me the most? It's like, see, if you've not got a toenail in your big toe, you shouldn't wear sandals. You should wear socks forever.
I mean, there was one time that, like, my fingernail split, and I was like, oh, my fingernail split. Do you have a nail cutter? And you're like, don't show me. I was like, it's fine. It's not even below the skin. Like, it's a thing.
Why are we talking about this? Let's move on.
You brought it up.
So my favorite thing ever. They sure
but,
clip
you know, the guy only had, like, just, like, oatmeal stuck between his feet. It wasn't that bad. And the guy,
But he's a brown person, so he's automatically dirty, apparently.
Is that supposed to be the joke?
That's the joke, right? Because brown people apparently don't wash. That's what the WWF thing in 1998.
I fucking hate 1998 so much.
Please follow WWE India on Twitter, where they have a huge following.
I just can't. I just can't with Tiger Ali Singh. Like, it's terrible.
I miss Tiger Jeet Singh. You know, like, his really crap dad.
Tiger, like, Jinder Mahal was basically trying to be Tiger Ali Singh without the grossness.
Did you see the thing today with Jinder?
I've been at work all day, so I've only seen a picture on Instagram of him playing Jinder Jenga.
He was playing Jenga, and then we came up with it. Jenga Mahal.
That's amazing.
Somebody was like, are you and Jinder best friends? I was like, I think it's a one-sided relationship. So my next idea is, because he seems to be always president, so if he's at WrestleMania, I'm going to get him and I to film stuff where we can have a song called, like, Friends Forever.
Oh my gosh, it should totally be the Friends Forever theme from Saved by the Bell.
That's the one.
Like the Zack Attack Friends Forever song. Yes.
Yep, except it's Gender Attack.
Oh my gosh, it'd be so good.
I can't say Gender Attack is really racially insensitive. Anyway, so they go to the back, right? Sable and Jacqueline's up next, and they decide to show Sable stretching. And it's like the best.
It is this video. Camera angle. It is so from below. And normally from below, camera angles are not flattering to anyone. And I don't think this was flattering to her. But it made, like, it basically made her boobs like obscure her face. Like you could barely see that she had a face because her boobs were just like the focus. And, you know, it was the, she was wearing her like cut off Sable Bomb whatever t-shirt, the 38 specials. I mean, what even was this camera angle? It made her look like she was just carrying around two fucking beach balls on her chest, which doesn't look comfortable.
I mean, I feel that's what she was doing. So that leads us to, which was set up on Heat, Sable and Jacqueline in an arm wrestling contest. What I love is, like, so Sable's in an arm wrestling contest, right? So the only real part of your body that's going to be worked here is your arms, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's the pressure point. And Sable decides to wear the shortest, tightest shorts that you could wear when you are not on a beach.
Or even if you are on a beach, really. Like,
I like to imagine that if Sandra's on the beach, she wears like some sort of thing that's like from neck to toe. You're like,
I do not. But I mean, I am like pale as a ghost. So I'll wear like a bikini or whatever. But I'm like, hey, y'all, I'm not going to be tan. And I have SPF 100 on. So whatever, shield your eyes. Or
wait, I'm like, oh, I'm going to Spain in a month. I'll hit the tan bed for a month. Get back.
Yeah,
to
no, I won't do it. Too much skin cancer in my family. There's no way. Like, I am a vampire through and through. That's why I like Gangrel so much. But
Sable, Jacqueline arm wrestling. And then Jackie ends up yanking Sable's arm down before it starts, thinking that she would win. Sable's trying to fight it off. It goes back and forth for like a long time, and then Jackie releases the hold and shoves the table into Sable, and then takes the trophy and breaks over Sable's back. The oddities run in to try and clear the ring, but the oddities are kind of like, you know, in high school when there's those like three people that want to be in the play, and you're like, mm-hmm. But you've never shown any interest in acting. You go, okay, we'll let you play an extra, and then they like fall through a set design piece.
Yep, 100%.
That's the oddities.
Kurgan was wearing a paisley shirt with his striped trousers, and it was a look. There is no universe that I believe that Sable is stronger than Jacqueline. Like, I just don't believe it. And so the segment lost a little bit from me, just for, you know, authenticity's sake, because I feel like Jacqueline could totally kick Sable's ass. But it was fun. I love an arm wrestling match in a wrestling show. Like, I fucking love it. Marlena and Sunny, bring it on, you know? But
oh, Sunny.
Yeah, Sunny. Remember Marlena?
I accept the challenge.
She accepted the challenge. But no, this was fun, though. It was a fun segment, and it was definitely better than just like, ho, skank, bikini, I'm better at having sex with Mark Miro than you are. Like, at least Sable and Jacqueline are doing something kind of one-on-one, and Mark Miro's not the focus of it or the prize, I guess. So this was more a return to, like, fun Sable and fun Jacqueline.
It was, yeah, I liked the segment. I thought it was good. Then we get more of Droz's world, where he's on his back porch with a bucket, showing off his tattoos, puking, and just generally being a reprobate.
What was the one tattoo? Was it Odie getting his brains blown out? Like, Odie from Garfield?
I think so, yeah.
Like, that's on his body forever, and he's very proud of this. This was basically like Superstar Inc. before Superstar Inc. Droz's world is very innovative.
So Droz and Bradshaw have a brawl for all match, and in the end, Droz is able to connect with a few shots. Bradshaw has to kind of hug him, and then they're deciding who the winner is going to be, and it's Bradshaw. And nobody-
it goes an extra round. I mean, it was a draw, and it goes an extra round. There's an extra round in the Brawl for All. That's a real thing.
So if somebody was like, if say Vince Russo was writing this show for Sandra, right? And he was like, okay, bro, we'll do the Brawl for All, bro. Bradshaw win, bro, with the extra round, bro.
Then he's not writing it for me.
But then he goes, Sandra is going to be watching it, bro. So why don't we cut to Al Snow in a bar with Head, where they're both having shots?
That was helpful. I appreciated that. What I love is the lecturing head.
What I love though is, you know, you don't like Vince Russo either, but like 30% what he does, you're like, I kind of love it.
Yeah, but then there's also stuff where, I mean, the whole like Sable Jacqueline thing up till like the arm wrestling contest was fun and less offensive than most of it. But I mean, the whole Sable Jacqueline, ho, skank, bitch, blah, cat fight, lingerie, like that just screams Vince Russo to me. Like that's all him, right? Because that's how he feels that women should be portrayed in wrestling television, because women wrestlers don't actually sell tickets and they can't actually be athletes who can be role models to little girls. They have to just like sort of sell their bodies. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Sable wanting to show her tits and stuff. Like if Sable wants to do that, fair play, like that's up to her. But the problem is that that's the only representation of women that you're showing me on this show. And he didn't think that women's wrestling was ever going to be a thing that like caught on. Fuck you, Vince Russo. It's fucking caught on.
I cannot wait till we get Linda McMahon. Fuck it. The scenes, Sondra. Absolute scenes.
Oh, I'm sure it's incredible. But like also a lot of the chaos for chaos sake that just sort of bores me, that also screams Vince Russo. Because it's like, oh, you didn't think this was going to happen. Well, no, I didn't. But like, I'm not compelled by it.
I think there's a thing about like in this time period when you have Nitro on the other side and you have all these people who like, you know, so many people on this show who like have been told they're no good. Al Snow, Steve Austin, The Rock, Mick Foley, all these people who are like, Kane, you know, they've all kind of like been tossed aside at points in their career. So,
because Kane was Glenn Jacobs' last chance. Like, he'd been the Christmas creature. He'd been Fake Diesel. He'd been the
Isaac Yankum.
He was Unabomb, right?
He was Unabomb.
That other territory?
Yeah, Smoky Mountain. But the two gimmicks he had in WWF was Isaac Yankum, Jerry Lawler's dentist, then the Fake Diesel, and this was his last one. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so up next week, so Al Snow is with Head in a bar drinking shots, and he's very endearing.
It's so good. And he's lecturing Head about, you know, it being his fun. I think he's saying what, like, Head can't drive or something because he's had too much.
All I'll say is, like, I never thought when I was, I mean, I think I'm sharing too much here, Sondra, but I never thought that I'd be on a train to Kilmarnock on a come down to interview Al Snow. And, like, he's so intense.
So, like, I'm sure.
You're looking at him, you're going, he knows. It's so weird that now we're like,
he has me figured out.
You're just fun, Al Snow. Anyway, so Sable's angry and she's heading back out to the ring. But while that's about to happen, we go to Dustin Runnels and he's like,
who's wearing a wedding ring, by the way? Lack of continuity much?
Well, no, he's back with Terry Runnels because...
Is he? Yeah. I didn't see that vignette.
Well, no, it's not on television. They've got a private life, Sondra. Geez, it's not all about you and your entertainment that you want.
Well, it should be. I need to know that he's back with her. I don't know if he's married someone else. I need to know.
I am, Green Hags, I am. he's saying we should all curl up with a good book, like the Bible. Because when all of us think, oh, a good book, we think the fictional Bible. That's a great book.
The Bible can be kind of great in places.
No, I like that the Bible, for me, is best when you just open a random page, like, and just read. Because it can be pretty great at points.
Depends where you open. I mean, if you open to the genealogy, it gets a bit... Although, like, Robert Crumb did a really cool genealogy book. Anyway.
Is that the end of that? Okay.
Yep. I'm cutting myself off.
So Dustin Runnels says we should curl up with a good book like the Bible, because he is coming back. They show the hearse, but here comes Sable. She calls Jacqueline a bitch, wants to fight. Jacqueline's on the Tron, calls it a hole, and will not walk into her trap. And she and Mark Meadow, they're not doing anything at SummerSlam. So they'll face Sable if she's up to it. The oddities show up in the locker room.
I wish I didn't know who Sable's partner was.
I know. There's so many things. It's like...
Finn Martin spoiled it on an episode of Power Slam. Otherwise, I wouldn't know.
I knew that he spoiled it. And I was like, should I tell you not to listen? It's like, I forgot. I mean, to be fair, it doesn't actually really play into the story. It's like a one-off thing.
I'm sure it is. Well, because I know, like, he goes on to do other things very shortly. So
we don't know
fine.
Who, though, so we'll not tell people.
Well, I didn't say. I didn't say who it was.
Michael Cole is outside of Steve Austin's door, babbling. Here comes Val Venus. The big Val Boski will not be blackmailed. He's not a screamer. And he then says that something worth shouting about is that he is attracting the ladies, the homely ladies, and there's nothing wrong. I don't know what he's talking about. There's a gauntlet match with Val Venus versus Kai and Tai. He he beats, I think, Men's Tails first. Then it's,
yeah, and he beats him so quickly.
With
like,
the perfect
Kai and Tai are just nothing except for Taka Michinoku here. Like, he basically just beats everyone in succession very, 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 very quickly. And then, like, after 3 minutes, after he's beaten, like, everyone, they're like, oh, Val Venus might be running out of steam. Like, he's been fighting for 3 minutes, really?
They're trying to create some drama, Sandra.
He's a porn star. He should be able to go for a little longer than 3 fucking minutes.
He's not fucking the guy.
No, but still.
Also, if he was fucking the guy,
he should have stamina.
He'd be at a disadvantage. Because if he likes the ladies, then he's got to try and get it up. He's got to try and finish it off.
True, but I mean, like, he's not fucking them, so it's not like he's having to try to be, like, attracted to these men and fuck them or anything like that, although he should be able to do that if he's really a professional.
This
but...
is an episode where we're not even drunk.
No, we're
just
not.
Just want that pair there. Happy SummerSlam weekend, everybody.
This is what happens. But I'm just saying, like, I feel like if he's a porn star and he's used to having sex on camera regularly, then he should have a little more stamina than to last, like, 3 minutes in a match against Kai and Tai.
Now, here's a question. You're in August of 1998.
Mm-hmm.
Do you hate fuck Val Venus?
I probably would.
You
don't.
I think
definitely use protection.
I think you secretly want a wee bit of the big Valboski, but you don't want to stay afterwards. You just want to get a bit of...
Oh, no. I'd be right. Like, we are not exchanging names, and he does not have any of my information.
What information is he going to have in August 1998? Your page number?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't want him to be able to find me afterward.
I love that you think, based on Val Venus's track record, that he's going to come looking for you.
I don't know. Like, you just never know with these
You're
people.
Very sure of yourself. anyway, Funaki comes in. He gets beat very quickly. Bill Clinton's on the phone again, talking about having sex with Monica Lewinsky.
Of course he is.
Then Togo's in. He's getting powerbombed.
Dick Togo versus Val Venus again.
Togo.
And Jerry Lawler really didn't make any comment about it. Like, he was upset last time that Dustin Reynolds was on commentary during Dick Togo versus Val Venus because he couldn't use all of his jokes. He didn't use them here, but I guess it was just over too quickly.
I'm saying nothing. So Taka runs down after Val wins. Taka can't body slam him, so Val does it. But in the end, the rest of Kai and Tai come down. And,
but Taka Michinoku winning was like the coolest thing, right?
He hits the driver, gets the win. So Yamaguchi doesn't have to spend 5 minutes in the ring with Val Venus and the most awkward anal sex party that I would ever see. Then the rest of Kai and Tai come down. They beat up Val Venus. So then Mrs. Yamaguchi-san comes out and slaps Val. And this is a real sentence. We have 4 minutes left here. Val has a super soaker of cum. And sprays Val Venus.
It's definitely shaped like a cock and painted pink.
Pink cum gun and yep. Sprays Mrs. Yamaguchi-san with it.
That's a thing that happened. So Taka Michinoku getting the win was unexpected in the sense that, like, if someone challenges a whole group to a gauntlet, you expect that person to win and be triumphant, especially if they're purporting to be the babyface. But I like that Taka Michinoku won in a sense because I love Taka Michinoku and he's like, he's the fucking champion. Where's his belt? Who knows? No one knows. But I like him getting a win over Val Venus because I don't like Val Venus and I like Taka Michinoku because he's adorable. There's a cum gun, 1998. Like, I think they really missed the boat because it could have been a super soaker tie-in. Like, they could have had Sunny get sprayed with a cum gun if this were a year ago.
They could have. Right, okay, so we got 2 minutes left. Main event segment. Undertaker's music comes on, he comes out, as does Austin. They stare at each other, but it turns out Undertaker has a Kane mask on. So is it Kane? Is it the Undertaker? If you look at his arms, you know. They have a brawl. And in the
no,
end...
No, it's Kane. Look at the hair.
It's Undertaker in a Kane mask.
No, it's totally Kane wearing the Undertaker's tattoos, isn't it?
Is it?
Well, how would he undress that quickly after they put him in the casket, put him in the hearse, and then the Undertaker's driving the car at the end? Like, could he really get changed that quickly? I don't think so.
The fact that we're questioned, it really shows the effectiveness of the segment.
And seriously, though, Kane's hair is shorter than the Undertaker's. I'm fairly sure it was Kane.
So
with,
I
like, a sleeve.
I thought it was the Undertaker. So basically what happens is...
No, and he is moving like Kane too. I'm really sure that it's Kane.
Okay, so there is a man with a Kane mask on and Undertaker's gear who is
maybe it's Luke Gallows.
Maybe it's Luke Gallows when he's 12.
Yeah.
And then in the end, they of course fight towards the hearse, and then Austin kicks him, tosses him in the hearse, and as he goes to get in the front, the Undertaker's in the driver's seat, and then Highway to Hell plays, which doesn't on this episode. And that's the end. Now, I'm curious, because this feud hasn't been working for you that much, but, I mean, they've thrown as much shit at this to make it weird as they can. There's a hearse, there's people in masks who we don't know who they are, there's people getting thrown in hearses, there's Undertaker driving away with a body. Did it do anything for you in the main event segment? Did you enjoy it more than the usual stuff?
It was fine. I don't really care who's dressed as who. Like, I just don't care about them dressing up as each other. I probably should care more. Like, it's shenanigans that I really should love, theoretically. But it's just the whole, like, I mean, I did figure out, I did come up with a theory that they must be in some sort of cahoots based on access to each other's wardrobes. Because, like, stealing someone's jacket once is one thing, but if from arena to arena, Kane is able to steal the Undertaker's clothing and the Undertaker is able to steal Kane's clothing, then I'm pretty sure that they're in some sort of agreement that they just have open access to each other's wardrobes. But yeah, I mean, it was fun, I guess, but I was like, okay, no, like, I see that this is Kane, because I'm pretty sure it was Kane. Like, maybe I'm wrong, but just, like, looking at his body movement and everything, it looked more like Kane than Undertaker. So I'm pretty sure Kane was wearing a Kane mask, because I don't see how Undertaker could have gotten changed that quickly either in the back of the hearse.
For me, I loved the main event segment. It was absolutely bonkers in all ways, shapes and forms. You've got a hearse. You've got Austin. Austin wants to drive a hearse. Don't know what he wants to do with it. You've got somebody dressed up.
Well, his beer is in there. We didn't mention that. Like, his, he has a hearse full of beer, because he said in the beginning, like, in the beginning promo, he was like, you know, throw me another beer. I got beer in the hearse. Like, I'm going to sit out here until Vince McMahon comes out. So, like, the Undertaker's not just stealing Kane's body in a casket. He's also stealing Austin's beer, which is just rude.
You've got somebody who's dressed up as Undertaker and Kane. You've got Undertaker driving away with the body. It's just mental. So I'm going to give this...
It is crazy.
I'm going to give this show a thumbs up, because it made me laugh, like, guffaw laugh so many times. And I don't think a lot of it was for the right reasons. Like, I think a lot of it was for, like, bad reasons. But I love the Ken Shamrock, Owen Hart, Dan Severn stuff. I thought the main event stuff was fun. The Sable and Jacqueline stuff was good. Al Snow in a bar. How can you beat that? Val Venus.
I was glad to see him back, for sure.
Val Venus with a cum gun. It's just so mental. Gangrel's here. So,
yay.
Yeah. Overall, I thought it was an easy episode to watch. So I'm going to give it a thumbs up. But I'm curious, are we continuing your reign of thumbs down, or does this get to middle?
No, actually, I would give this one a thumbs... Maybe a thumbs up? I think I might give this a thumbs up.
Okay,
it's like a hesitant thumbs up, but it's a thumbs up just because it was very easy to watch. I mean, I did fall asleep in the middle of it, but that's just because I was really tired. And the key here is that I turned it off right before the arm wrestling match and was like, oh no, I should probably take a nap before I watch the arm wrestling match because I want to enjoy the arm wrestling match and then the rest of it. So, yeah, I mean... This is like a thumbs up for Retro Raw. It's not necessarily a thumbs up for like my favorite wrestling show, but it was fun enough to watch. It was pretty easy. Even the Brawl for All stuff, I found something to talk about, I guess. And so,
what's fun though is we've got one more episode to go before we get to SummerSlam. And for SummerSlam, we are being joined by the titan of wrestling journalism. Finn Martin's coming back.
Oh, I'm excited. That'll be fun.
For the SummerSlam review. So it'll be pretty interesting. You know, Austin Undertaker on paper should not be Sondra's thing. So we'll see what happens. And Austin does get an injury during the match. So I'm curious to see how Sondra feels about that. Rock and Triple H has not been your thing. So
not at all.
Will the ladder match that people enjoy? Will it win you round in any way? We'll see.
Will the ladder be my favorite character? We'll see.
Where can people find you on Twitter, Sondra?
Find me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check out all our interviews for SummerSlam weekend going up at youtube.com/InsideTheRopes. And to hear our retro pay-per-views, current pay-per-view reviews, all sorts of other bonus content, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Also insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets for tickets for Pat Patterson and Edge.
There you go. It's all there. I think you're hearing this as takeovers on or something. So... enjoy SummerSlam, everybody. We'll be on Patreon with our full SummerSlam 2018 review. You'll only hear it over there, so do sign up. And then Sondra, Finn, and I will be there for the SummerSlam 1998 review on August 30th. So I'm away to watch NXT. Enjoy, everybody. I'll talk to you soon. Whose plane is out, Sondra?
I have no idea who is playing. Gangrel. Gangrel is playing us out because he spat blood and I love him.
And he hated Donald Trump before it was cool. Bye.
Yay, bye.